to evaluate the glyphosate in isolation, but they use it in the context of additional chemicals in the formulation that make it more toxic to the weeds and also more toxic to us. Is glyphosate non-toxic? Monsanto says, yes, it is. You know, it's great because it disrupts this pathway called the shikimate pathway that's in plants. We don't have that pathway in our cells, so how could it possibly affect us? It's a nice argument, but it's not enough because what actually happens is our gut microbes do have the shikimate pathway, and furthermore, we depend upon them to produce really important molecules for us that we can't make. And we can't make those molecules because we don't have that shikimate pathway. So this is a really serious flaw in their argument. And so these are the essential aromatic amino acids. They're precursors to many different neurotransmitters, the melanin that provides tanning in your skin, melatonin that allows you to sleep at night, a lot of really important things, thyroid hormone, and various vitamins. They all come from that shikimate pathway. Also, as I said, the other ingredients in Roundup greatly increase its toxicity. And glyphosate is insidious. When you're exposed to it at low doses, you don't notice an immediate effect. You don't get a headache or a stomach ache. So you don't know you're being poisoned. But it's slowly eroding your health over time. And at some point, you'll get some serious disease. And then it's going to be very hard to backtrack. The studies, of course, are too short to see those kinds of effects. So what are the effects of glyphosate? Not just the shikimate pathway, because it has an effect which causes the shikimate pathway to be broken, but those effects also affect other parts of the system. And so, as I mentioned, the gut microbes, the beneficial gut microbes, are particularly susceptible to glyphosate. So they tend to die out, lactobacillus and bifidobacteria. They tend to be preferentially killed, which then allows space for the pathogens to grow, and so you get this inflammatory gut situation. It interferes with the function of cytochrome P450 enzymes in the liver. These are incredibly important enzymes that are used to activate vitamin D, to detoxify other toxic chemicals, to break down retinoic acid so it doesn't build up to too high levels, and to produce the bile acids. These are really important things that the liver does using these CYP enzymes. It chelates important minerals. It means it puts a cage around them so that they become inaccessible. And they become inaccessible to the gut microbes as well as to our own cells. And so they become harmed in part because they don't have access to these minerals, important minerals like iron and cobalt and manganese. It interferes, as I said, with the synthesis of the aromatic amino acids through the shikimate pathway. And this leads to shortages in the neurotransmitters like serotonin, melatonin, epinephrine, all of these really, really important molecules. And then it disrupts sulfate synthesis and sulfate transport. And I believe sulfate deficiency is a generic problem in our society that can explain most of the diseases that are on the rise today in this country. And I write a lot more about sulfate on other papers that you can find on my webpage. I won't have too much to say about it here today. So this is just some examples of things that are disrupted. Folate and vitamin K come from the shikimate pathway. Vitamin A doesn't get broken down by the CYPs. Vitamin D doesn't get activated. Cobalamin has cobalt that it can't gain access to. The aromatics. Methionine is the core sulfur-containing amino acid. All these different minerals, iron, manganese, cobalt, selenium, zinc, sulfur, all compromised by glyphosate. And these various neurotransmitters that I mentioned before, the skin tanning agent, the thyroid hormone, and also a couple of important molecules for antioxidant defenses. All of these things are disrupted by glyphosate. Glyphosate also causes a very interesting effect, and this has been shown in two very recent papers, one of which showed that a low dose of a single antibiotic can cause the pathogens to become easily resistant to other antibiotics. It trains them in resistance training so that they can quickly adapt, and you get into these kinds of multiple antibiotic-resistant problems like MRSA, the Staph aureus, or like C. difficile, C. diff, or Pseudomonas aeruginosa, all of these problems, the salmonella, the food poisoning, all of these things become more resistant to the antibiotics that we have available to use because of their exposure to glyphosate as acting as a low-dose antibiotic. Glyphosate has been patented as an antimicrobial agent. That patent preceded its patent as a herbicide. And so the other paper shows, in fact, that glyphosate has this effect. The first paper predicts that this would happen with glyphosate. The other one shows that it affects E. coli and salmonella so as to make them versatile in becoming resistant to other antibiotics. This is a paper that shows the cytochrome P450 problem. There are several different chemicals that were studied, one of which is 2,4-D. And glyphosate was by far the strongest effect. in reducing the level of cytochrome P450 enzymes in the liver. Glyphosate and kidney disease. In Sri Lanka and in Central America, there are young agricultural workers who are dying in alarming numbers due to kidney failure. And they've been very concerned about this. And some there's a couple of papers by Jaya Sumana et al. From Sri Lanka where they very carefully looked at who's getting this problem, who isn't, and what's the difference between where they're working. And they identified glyphosate as being the distinguishing factor. Those who were working in the fields where glyphosate was being used on the rice paddies were developing this kidney failure problem. Glyphosate working synergistically with arsenic and with nitrogen oxides in the water, they suspected that these were contributing as well. But they really fingered glyphosate, and as a consequence, Sri Lanka took action, and also El Salvador, and they've banned glyphosate. It cannot be used either for personal use or for commercial use in those two countries.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQAQ Loyal.
My next topic. Here's a picture I found on the web, which I find very graphic. And it's saying, and it's talking about glyphosate being used to dry down the wheat right before the harvest. Here are a couple of books. So we've got a lot of literature coming out about how wheat is toxic and it's a bad food and you shouldn't eat it. You know, wheat is actually the staff of life. It's a healthy food. It's got a lot of important nutrients in it. It's not a bad food. It's just that it's combined with the glyphosate is what makes it toxic. I believe the glyphosate in the wheat is the reason why we now have an epidemic in gluten intolerance. And in fact, I've written a book, an article about this, a long article together with Anthony Samso, which is in an open access journal. So you can go find it on my web page and read that article if you want to learn more about all of the ways in which glyphosate is linked to gluten intolerance. So what's going on is that farmers have become more and more enchanted with the idea of spraying the wheat with glyphosate right before, with Roundup right before the harvest, which has a lot of benefits because it hastens the maturity of the crop, especially if you live up north where there's about to be a freeze. You've got to get the seed out before the frost. It also gets a head start on weed control for next year, and it reduces the amount of residue that makes it easier for the combine when you're harvesting the seed. Of course, the disadvantages are the herbicide cannot be washed off prior to human use. It's going to go in, it's going to soak up into the seed, and it's going to get into the products that are derived from that seed. And of course, the animals that are eating that food are also going to end up with glyphosate in their tissues and therefore in the meat and in the milk. So the crops is quite an impressive list of crops for which this has become a popular practice, including wheat, barley, legumes, corn, sunflower, kiwi, grapes, raspberries, apples, soybeans, alfalfa, and sugarcane. So this quote says we may be able to knock out 80-90% of the resistant ryegrass with glyphosate. So it's like really pushing this idea of getting rid of the ryegrass grass, which can become a problem for next year's crop. This is a plot that shows the glyphosate usage on wheat, not corn and soy. That's the black line. And the yellow boxes are the celiac disease, the incidence of celiac disease according to the hospital discharge data in the United States. And you can see that these two curves match pretty well, not as well as the, I thought I had it, yeah, not as well as the autism one, but R equals 0.975, which is very, very good correlation between these two curves, suggesting that the glyphosate is what's causing the celiac disease problem. This is from some examples from our paper. In our paper, we have many, many references, hundreds of references supporting our argument. But here's just a couple of examples of what we found. First of all, glyphosate preferentially kills bifidobacteria in the gut, and bifidobacteria are depleted in association with celiac disease. This is sort of connecting the dots. We haven't proven it, but we can suggest that those are related. And also celiac disease is associated with an increased risk to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There's actually generally an increased risk to cancer, and this is probably the reason why they have on average a shortened lifespan by about 4 years. Glyphosate itself is also directly linked to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Okay, gut microbes and obesity, my next topic. Our gut microbes are incredibly important to our health. This is something that the researchers are really figuring out lately, and we're seeing a real blossoming of papers discussing all these different aspects of the gut microbes. Very complex system. Every person has a unique profile of gut microbes, and they outnumber our own cells by a factor of 10. 10 of them for every one of us. And their genome, their collective genome, outnumbers our genome by a factor of 100. So 1% of the genomic message in our body, 1% is human. The rest of it is microbes. Pretty sobering to think about that. They need to be healthy. If they're not healthy, we're not healthy. Because they do a lot to control the maintenance of our health. So glyphosate causes an overgrowth of the pathogens. This leads to the pathogens release toxic biological toxins like p-phenols, which are associated with autism, and then that causes things. It causes an allergic reaction, an inflammatory reaction. The macrophages come in, try to attack these pathogens. You get an inflammatory gut, and you saw it in Judy's talk. She talked about this inflamed stomach. I suspect glyphosate is playing a role in what she's seeing, and especially because she sees inflammation even in the crops that are not GMO. But both crops were, in both cases, the crops were treated with glyphosate to control the weeds. So she probably has much less glyphosate in the control, but it's still there because it's not an organic control. So I think this explains the inflammatory gut. Potentially it might be most of the problem with the inflammatory gut. We need to sort that out. To what extent is it the GMO gene itself that's causing the problems versus the chemicals that are being that are increased because of the presence of the GMO gene that causes the plant to be willing to be sprayed with it without dying. So an interesting thing is that you can take gut microbes from an obese person, you can put them into a mouse, and that mouse will become obese. So this really shows a direct link between the obesity and the balance or the imbalance of the microbes in the gut. So obesity, of course, is an epidemic in the United States. This recent paper from 2015 says more than two-thirds of U.S. adults are now overweight or obese. And it's, of course, it's linked to a number of different other problems with chronic health conditions, such as type 2 diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and arthritis. This is a chart from a paper that was proposing that sugar was the cause of obesity. And I think you've probably heard a lot of stuff lately about how sugar is bad for you. Sugar should be bad for you, and I think it's because of the glyphosate that's in it. When you look at the different sugars, you have the high fructose corn syrup, which is very popular in this country, which is produced from GMO Roundup Ready corn. You have the sugar beets, which is produced from GMO Roundup Ready sugar beets. And then you have the cane sugar. And the cane sugar is produced from sugar cane that's sprayed with Roundup right before the harvest. Even the honey contains Roundup. That's been shown in a study. Even organic honey contains Roundup. So it's pretty scary that it's everywhere in the sugars. This shows a plot of sugar going back to 1700 here at the beginning, and then this enormous increase starting around here, and then accelerated increase after about 1975, or even earlier, maybe 1950. Glyphosate was introduced in 1975. The other plot shows the obesity trend. And we were going up with a certain slope here. When we hit 1975, we hit a corner, and we started going up even faster. So I think the glyphosate is a major contributor to the obesity epidemic. Certainly, in terms of this curve, it matches it. This is a plot of death due to obesity out of the CDC data. And it's death, of course, obesity being the cause of death is unusual. So this is a small number of people, but you can see that there's a trend that matches with the glyphosate. The red is the glyphosate usage on the crops, and the blue is the adoption of the GMO Roundup Ready crop. And you can see that the GMO Roundup Ready crops were introduced first around 1996. That's where the blue line begins. And then it increased quite rapidly up to, like 90 to 95% now of the corn and the soy and the canola is GMO Roundup Ready. So we've done a tremendous transition over that time period from 1996 to 2010 in terms of switching over to this strategy of having these crops be resistant to Roundup. So how might glyphosate cause obesity? This is a question that I'm asking right now. I don't necessarily have the answer, but I have some ideas. Glyphosate, as you know, disrupts the liver's ability to detoxify pervasive organic pollutants. That's because it messes up the SIPE enzymes. And so what you can do is you can build a layer of fat around your belly, and you can stuff those toxic chemicals into those fat cells, and they can hold them and hide them so that they won't end up, for example, in your brain. So that's a way to actually keep yourself relatively safe from those chemicals by just piling them up in storage tanks around your middle. And I think that might be what's going on. And I think the gut microbes are going to help you do that, because they're, you'll develop these gut microbes that are very good at converting sugar into fat. And they're also going to tell your brain, hey, eat sugar. So they're going to encourage you to eat these sort of carbs that they can convert to fat, that you can put around your belly, and you can stuff those toxic chemicals in there so that you'll be protected. Another thing is, another idea is serotonin, which is produced from the shikimate pathway, so should be depleted. And in fact, low serotonin is also associated with violent behavior, and we've had a lot of issues with violence in this country, all these gun shootouts in the schools, for example, I think may be connected as well to this serotonin deficiency. But serotonin is also an appetite suppressant, and so low serotonin can cause you to eat more. I've been looking lately into this disease called kwashiorkor. It's quite interesting. It's supposed to be a nutritional deficiency disease, and I don't doubt that it's associated with probably critical deficiencies in certain minerals, which, of course, you can expect in the context of glyphosate. But furthermore, I think glyphosate is directly contributing toxicity to cause this disease. And this disease is prevalent in Malawi, Africa, where the staple diet is a GMO Roundup Ready maize. The victims have disrupted microbes, and the way they're disrupted, their microbes are disrupted, looks like the way they're disrupted in autism here in the United States. And they also have an important enzyme that's known to be inhibited by glyphosate that's reduced in association with kwashiorkor. So there's, again, this is like connecting the dots. This is a lot of what I do in my research, is to look at what glyphosate does and look about what a particular disease is and how it's characterized and see if those match up. And so if you get enough of those things matching up, you start to have a pretty convincing story. But it's not proof. We still need, studies that will directly show that this is the case. And now also, if you take their gut microbes and you plant them into a mouse, you can actually produce kwashiorkor in the mice. So again, the gut microbes are really, really important in maintaining these diseases. And so there's a quote from somebody from this country, this Maryam Mayet, who's the director of their African Center for Biosafety. It's a travesty that we are the only nation on earth where our staple food, namely maize, is genetically modified. So they're doing a giant experiment with the children in their population, feeding them. The bulk of their diet is this GM Roundup Ready maize. Okay, GM soy is toxic food. This is a study that was done in 2014. I should point out that there's a lot of studies showing up in 2014, 2015, so I feel like there's a lot of momentum in the research community to try to uncover some of these things. This one was looking at organic soy, conventional soy, where glyphosate was being used to control the weeds, and GMO Roundup Ready soy. There's three different populations here. And you can see that there are results only on the GMO Roundup Ready. The other ones came out completely negative in looking for glyphosate and for AMPA, which is a breakdown product. The red is the glyphosate, the blue is the AMPA. AMPA is also toxic. And so they got high levels in 70% of the GM soy crops. Monsanto had said that any residue levels above 5.6 milligrams per kilogram would represent extreme levels, far higher than those that you would typically expect. And so there's 5.6. So 70% of these samples had significantly higher than 5.6. Soy formula, turns out, when autistic kids who are fed soy versus those who are fed milk, regular milk, end up with a increased risk of seizures. Here's listed three different kinds of seizures with a 2.6-fold increase on febrile seizures, 2.1-fold increase on epilepsy, and a 4-fold increase in simple partial seizures. So all these different kinds of seizures have an increased risk for those autistic kids that are being fed the GM soy formula. I suspect that hexane is playing a role here, and I don't know to what extent hexane versus glyphosate or synergistically the two of them working together. Hexane is used as a chemical, organic chemical, to extract the oil from the seed. It actually breaks open the cell wall of the cells and lets the oil get out, increases the yield when you're trying to take these seeds and turn them into soy protein over here and soybean oil over here. You want to separate them out into these sort of chemical products that you can then put into the processed foods. And so China and Europe both have regulatory restrictions on how much hexane can be present in the food. And the U.S. doesn't have a limit, doesn't measure it, doesn't care. So we don't know how much hexane is showing up in our food, but we can certainly be confident that it's not zero. if you look at what does hexane do, and there have been studies done on inhaled hexane because you can just breathe it in a certain working environment. People who are exposed, they can study it. And they're finding that with low levels, you get basically kind of like feeling like you have the flu, dizziness, headache, nausea, vomiting. High enough levels can kill you through asphyxiation. And if you have just a chronic low-level exposure, you get a lot of different problems that develop, chronic issues that develop, that are, in fact, all on the increase in today's society. So I'm suspecting that this is a good match to what we're seeing epidemiologically. Peripheral neuropathy is really growing at an alarming rate right now. Lots of people are in pain, and they're taking painkillers, sometimes getting addicted to them. And we have a lot of weakness, and loss of sensation, difficulty walking, muscles decaying, breaking down, and visual disturbances. So I think hexane needs to be is another chemical like glyphosate that needs to be studied more, and is working together with glyphosate, I suspect, because I should think that hexane would make it easier for glyphosate to get into the cells and do damage. This is some data that I've been looking at the VARS database in lots of different ways, and I have various papers that I've published on it. VARS is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System put out by the U.S. government. And so whenever someone gets a shot and has some kind of reaction, they can report it. And it's not every, a small percentage of the actual reactions are reported, but nonetheless, this is an interesting database that you can examine. And what I did here was I simply took all the data starting in 1991 and going to 2013. And at each year, you can count up the number of cases where either autism or developmental delay or anxiety is mentioned in the report. And what I found was there was an alarming increase in the number that for which this was occurring right around the year 2000. So I was aware of this curve, and I didn't really know what could possibly be explaining it. And I was looking for things that might look like that. And I actually found a match in the data on the amount of soybean oil, basically the corn oil, soybean oil, and canola oil, all these cheap oils that are GMO Roundup ready, became very popular around the year 2000. And that was exactly when they were rushing out there was a rapid increase in the number of GMO versions of these crops appearing in the field. So it coincides with that. An increase in the availability of these cheap oils. And also there was a push towards buying these because they were telling you trans fats are bad. People weren't buying Crisco. Saturated fat is bad. Oh, we don't want to use lard or butter. Let's use these, healthy, quote-unquote healthy oils based on these GMO Roundup Ready products. So I suspect that there's a connection there with these, with the vaccines. And I think it's also related to aluminum. And I have some papers I've written explaining how aluminum and glyphosate are synergistically toxic. They work together to cause increased harm over working independently. And when I have another plot that shows that aluminum is also going up very sharply in 2000. First of all, introducing more aluminum into the vaccines, and secondly, more aluminum-containing vaccines are showing up in the reports, probably because the aluminum is becoming more toxic because of the additional presence of the glyphosate. And so that's the correlation coefficient there. And this just 2000, and then it's interesting that in 2000 they phased out mercury. They made a big deal about the mercury in the vaccines. People were worried about it. They phased it out, and they said, oh, the autism rates continue to go up, and therefore it's not the mercury. But this doesn't rule out the mercury because they're going up because of all this additional glyphosate, which is masking whatever effect you might have seen from the mercury. So McDonald's was a little slow to convert, but finally in 2002 they stopped using the beef tallow to fry their fries, and they switched over to these cheap soybean oils under pressure. And so this is a quote here that the fast food giant that once fried its potatoes in beef tallow will start cooking French fries, chicken nuggets, and fish fillets in a new kind of soy corn oil, which is a GMO Roundup Ready glyphosate contaminated hexane contaminated oil that I would not want to eat. And so this was partially motivated by the desire to make sure the French fries were really vegetarian for people who didn't want to have any meat products in their food. But so that's when I stopped eating McDonald's French fries, once I knew they were being fried in these toxic oils. Okay, cancer, my next topic. WHO, the World Health Organization, has recently, last March, labeled glyphosate as a probable carcinogen. This is a big deal, and many countries are reacting to this. by introducing new regulation.
KKCR, Kauai Community Radio.
But they reviewed the evidence. They decided there needs to be a big change. And it had been, I think, labeled as completely non-carcinogenic before. So this is quite an enormous change in the labeling of glyphosate in terms of cancer. And I'm very pleased to say that my collaborator, Anthony Samso, has acquired documents. It was difficult to get these documents from the EPA under the Freedom of Information Act. These are secret documents. Monsanto got the EPA to label these documents secret, and they are the early studies that Monsanto did in order to, quote-unquote, prove that glyphosate is safe. And part of it involves cancer studies. And so Anthony's gotten something like 10,000 pages of stuff that you can't search. You have to just go through it and read it line by line. And he's been poring over it, trying to finding interesting information in there. And he and I are now working collaboratively on a paper based on this work, on what he's found here, and discussing from the literature how you can see that glyphosate would in fact be a carcinogen. So this paper is not yet even submitted to a journal, so I'm hoping this there will be a journal that will publish it. And he's seeing evidence of carcinogenicity from their early studies, which they then labeled secret and then always made sure they never quite did their study design the same way so that it wouldn't show up again. So glyphosate was found in mother's milk, and this was done by an initiative from an organization called Moms Across America. I know the person who founded this. She's a young mother, Zen Honeycutt. She's really awesome, and she's been really working hard to get the message out about the dangers of glyphosate. And she's become aware because her children were suffering from various health issues. And when she put them on an organic diet, they got a lot better. And after that, she then became a very strong activist working towards this goal of getting glyphosate off the market. She got mothers to donate their breast milk, sent them off for testing, and they found levels of glyphosate in the breast milk of 76 to 166 micrograms per liter, which is 760 to 1600 times higher than the limit that's allowed in water, drinking water in Europe. And they also tested urine and found that the levels were up to 10 times higher than the levels that were found in a similar test done in Europe. And she then maintains that Monsanto is wrong about bioaccumulation. Monsanto says that glyphosate just goes straight through. It goes out the kidneys. It disappears very quickly. But if it's showing up in the breast milk, that's clearly not the case. And also, if it's in the breast milk, then it's in the breast, and you have to wonder whether it might cause breast cancer. And that's a subject that I'm interested in trying to learn more about. One thing that is clear is that glyphosate is estrogenic. And this study was made that very clear. They found that cancer cells that were sensitive to estrogen, that would multiply if exposed to estrogen, were able to multiply, which is to grow the tumor larger, under exposure to extremely tiny levels of glyphosate, measured in parts per trillion. Really tiny amounts could cause, and that's an evidence of a hormone disrupting chemical when it operates in really tiny amounts. And I should point out also from Judy Carman's study where she saw the enlarged uterus in the females with the GMO crop, I again suspect that may also be due to the glyphosate acting as an estrogenic agent, which would cause something like an enlargement of the uterus. I was looking then at breast cancer. It's, you know, we look at many different diseases to see what matches with glyphosate in terms of also going up in step with the glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops. Breast cancer doesn't match glyphosate. It looks like this. It was going down, steadily down from about 1998 up to about 2006. This is the hospital discharge data. So when people are released from the hospital, breast cancer is written as one of the conditions that they suffered from in the hospital. And going down until 2006 and then turning around and starting to go back up. We don't have any information beyond 2010. I would love to know whether it's continuing to go up or whether it's leveling off or whatever's happening at that point, but we just don't know. The data are not released yet. So this is not, obviously doesn't match. So we might wonder why that might be. And one thought that I had is that there's another factor going on here, which is the estrogen, the hormone replacement therapy, which was very popular. Back when I went through menopause, it was very popular for people to take hormone replacement therapy through menopause. And then they became aware that it was causing breast cancer in alarming numbers. And so they became much more conservative in the amount of, in the cases where they would allow the woman to take this hormone replacement therapy. Only when they have really severe symptoms would they recommend that they take it. And so I think there's been a gradual decrease in exposure to hormone replacement therapy, which could explain this drop up to 2006. And in fact, it was shown that this was only true for white women, not for black women. When you look at this curve for the blacks versus the whites, it's only the whites that have this drop. The blacks are going flat out to 2006. So that also indicates it could be due to that effect. You can take the data for just the Caucasians, and you can model that first part out to 2006 with an exponential decay, very simple model. And you can extend that model into the future, and then you can subtract it out from the curve to see what would it look like. If your model is correct, you can just remove that effect and see what the curve looks like after that. So if you do that, you get this shape, and then it matches much more closely with the glyphosate usage on the corn and soy crops. This is the breast cancer corrected for the theory of the estrogen effect of the hormone replacement therapy. And then this is the glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops. That's a pretty good match with an R equals 0.937. Roundup also disrupts steroid synthesis. And this is actually very shocking to me. This paper from the year 2000 showed that glyphosate exposure in vitro to cells from the adrenal glands, which produce really important steroids like the sex hormones like estrogen and testosterone, and also cortisol and aldosterone that are concerned with managing stress. These really important molecules that are derived from cholesterol need this STAR protein in order to be produced. And glyphosate, Roundup, suppresses STAR by a huge amount, by 90%, and then reduces the synthesis of the steroids by 94%. That's really, really huge. And so the adrenals are going to be stressed in this situation, and we actually have a lot of issues with people having problems with their adrenals, including young children having a neuroblastoma that's linked to the adrenal glands as a form of cancer. These pictures went all over the web as a consequence of a paper that Seralini wrote. Seralini together with collaborators published in the journal Lancet a few years back. This paper went viral and a lot of people were quite concerned. This was a study that was the first time that a study was done over the entire lifespan of these rats, having a control group that was being fed an organic diet, and then various groups that were fed the GMO food with and without the Roundup. So you had both the GMO, the GMO plus Roundup, and the Roundup alone, three different groups, and letting them eat this diet for their entire life and see what happens. And one of the things he found was these massive mammary tumors, particularly in the ones that were fed Roundup. That was the worst case, was when they were exposed to the Roundup in the water, of the number of mammary tumors. So he had several things that happened. The females had the mammary tumors. The males had a significantly increase of tumors in the liver and the kidney, and also sort of generally liver kidney dysfunction. And the sex hormones were disrupted for both the males and the females. And that might relate to this problem with the STAR that I talked about a couple slides back. They had enhanced oxidative stress, and oxidative stress can lead to irritation, which can go to cancer also. And then they also had a shortened lifespan. And the effects did not become apparent at all after 3 months. They only started to show up after 4 months. So all these studies that go for 3 months, you're not going to see any of this. This paper was retracted on grounds of having insufficient significance, which is a very unusual reason to retract a paper. And there was a lot of flack over that and a lot of protest. And then it was eventually republished in its pretty much the same paper in a new journal. So it is now available as a publication. These are some plots from a paper by Nancy Swanson et al. Nancy Swanson is now collaborating with me. We're having a great time together. She's been looking through all the U.S. data on health issues and looking for which diseases are going up and which ones are going up in step with glyphosate. And that's a really good place to start with the study. So she and I are a tag team where she identifies a certain disease that's correlated with Roundup, and then I go to the research literature to try to explain biologically, biochemically, biophysically, how could glyphosate cause this disease? And so we're gradually sort of building a story that makes sense for why we're seeing these correlations. It's not just a matter of, oh, there's this correlation. There's this correlation, and then there's this whole biological story for why this makes sense. And so here are four different examples of cancer. She has something like 30-something figures in this paper of various diseases, including diabetes and obesity. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many things, autism, Alzheimer's, very well correlated with glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops. And these are four cancers, thyroid, kidney, liver, and bladder cancer, all going up pretty well in step with glyphosate. Anencephaly, my next topic, is an area in Washington called Yakima, Washington is a town in Washington State. And they had, over a period of a couple of years, they had a very high rate of this extremely rare disorder called anencephaly, where the child is born essentially without a brain. There's no brain. And so they were clearly worried about this situation, and they started studying and trying to figure out what might be causing it. Turns out they used a lot of pesticides on the farmlands around the area. There's a waterway that goes through it, and they were using glyphosate, applying it in large amounts, both in the crops and in the waterways to control the weeds that were growing in the waterways. A 5% solution of glyphosate was used heavily around the irrigation ditches. They studied 75 pesticides. They found 63% of them were found present. They didn't study glyphosate at all because glyphosate is non-toxic to humans. But it turns out that glyphosate has actually been linked to the same problem in studies in tadpoles. And that's due directly to its effect on retinoic acid, which I mentioned earlier, having to do with the CYP enzyme dysfunction. And so here's another picture of some more of these kids. This came from Don Huber, this slide. And he actually found the data on the amount of glyphosate that was being used. And this is 1980, 1990, 2000. And then here, when you get to 2010, they had this huge amount of glyphosate that they were using to control those weeds, right at the same time as they had this epidemic in anencephaly. So this seems like pretty strong evidence that glyphosate is connected to this, especially when you combine it with this paper, which showed that when they applied glyphosate, exposed these tadpoles to glyphosate, it increased the retinoic acid, which you expect because it can't be broken down by the liver. And that then disrupted the development of these frogs, and they ended up with one of the problems they had was microcephaly, which is small brain, so very close to anencephaly, which is no brain. Okay, species in stress. So U.S. Geological Survey did a study on pesticides in rainwater in Mississippi. They mentioned that 2 million kilograms of glyphosate were applied statewide in 2007, huge amount. And when they tested the air and the water, they found over 75% of the samples were tested positive for glyphosate or for AMPA, the breakdown product. So if it rains, you know, you might have glyphosate in that rainwater. Here's a bunch of species that are in trouble today. We have, of course, the bumblebee, the bee colony collapse syndrome. I think glyphosate is playing an important role there because it disrupts the CYP enzymes in the liver, and the CYP enzymes are needed to break down the neonicotinoids. So there's a synergistic effect between the glyphosate and the neonics to cause essentially a brain, a bee autism is what I would call it. The monarch butterfly, I'm sure you know, is disappearing. And the bats in New England, they have this white nose bat disease. I haven't seen bats in a long time, and we used to be able to see them at night, and they're not there anymore. Now, the ladybug, I used to see ladybugs on the plants when I was a child. It was always fun to find a ladybug. I haven't seen a ladybug in at least a decade. And the frogs are disappearing. They're getting all kinds of defects like this one. There's a lot of bad stuff going on. These guys are starfish off the coast of California that have some kind of a weird disease where their skeleton is just essentially melting. Many of these have to do with fungus infections. And I suspect that the fungus infection is being caused by glyphosate. This is a paper from Nature from around 2014. And you can see the red is fungi. So over here, you're having causes of extinction, and 75% of the causes are attributed to fungi. Over here, you have a plot of where the animals are dying from fungi. You look at this piece right here. That's right on top of the GMO Roundup Ready corn and soy crops in the United States. Huge problem with fungi there. And then this is just showing over time. This is the year 2000, the latest year on their curve. Giant occurrence of fungus problems around the world. And so there's a quote here: in both animals and plants, an unprecedented number of fungal and fungal-like diseases have recently caused some of the most severe die-offs and extinctions ever witnessed in wild species and are jeopardizing food security. Here's a paper that shows that glyphosate enhances the growth of a fungus that produces an aflatoxin, which is an incredibly toxic biological molecule. The aflatoxin causes, it's mutagenic, carcinogenic, teratogenic, meaning that it causes birth defects, hepatotoxic, liver disease, suppresses the immune system, and inhibits several metabolic systems. So really toxic stuff. And in particular, with respect to birth defects, I want to mention a paper that I'm collaborating with Nancy Swanson and also a woman named Judy Hoy, who lives in western Montana. We had a lot of fun writing this paper. It's about to appear. It should appear in the September issue of the journal Poultry, Fisheries, and Wildlife Sciences. We have many plots in this paper, just like the earlier one that Nancy Swanson had done, but they're new plots of correlations between glyphosate and various problems, including things like failure to thrive in the infants. We began with the wild animals, and Judy has had experience with wild animals for many decades in where she lives, and she's become an expert at studying their problems, and she's seeing a lot of birth defects. She actually finds dead animals and opens them up, looks at the heart, looks at the liver. She's been finding heart problems, for example. So everything that she found, she's found failure to thrive. Well, everything she found in her wild animals, we went to the U.S. hospital data, for example, hospital discharge data, to see if there's a correlation with that same condition in humans. We map it to human conditions and see if there's a correlation. And we found a tremendous number of different problems, particularly with the infants, but also with adults, of diseases that are going up in step with glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops and that match with the diseases she's seeing in the wild animals. This is just one example, the congenital heart defects and also enlarged right ventricle. So one of these curves is the congenital heart defects and the other one is the enlarged right ventricle in the adults. She saw this also in the animals when she looked at the hearts of the wild animals. And this is the glyphosate usage on the corn and soy crops. So these three all match quite well. So please watch for this paper to appear shortly in the literature, and it'll be open access, so you'll be able to read it without paying for it. Taking action. Dutch ban Roundup. I was very excited to see the Europeans are all banning Roundup, banning its use for personal use. You can't go down to the hardware store and buy it anymore in Holland. And this is already was true for Russia and Mexico. And in this article, they were saying France is going to follow soon, and also Brazil. And then shortly after this article, they announced that France had also banned glyphosate for personal use, for private sale. And I talked about Sri Lanka already. They actually banned it twice. They had banned it earlier following their knowledge about glyphosate causing kidney failure. And then the farmers had protested because they felt they couldn't grow the crops without the glyphosate. So they removed the ban. But then the new president, the first thing he did was to put the ban back in place, partly probably motivated by the WHO's announcement of the carcinogenic aspects of glyphosate. And so this is banned completely, commercial and personal use. And that includes then El Salvador and Sri Lanka and Bermuda are three countries who refuse to allow glyphosate usage in their countries for any purpose. Organic food sales are booming, and I think that's really wonderful. This is actually a curve that the pro-GMO folks like to push out and say, ha, 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 organic food is causing autism, because one of these plots is the red is organic, the growth of organic, and the blue is the growth of autism, and it's a very good match. And so they're sort of saying, oh, yeah, everything's correlated with everything. We don't need to worry about it. But I say, well, that's perfect. Autism causes organic, because I think all the parents who have kids who have all these different issues like the asthma and the eczema and the ADHD and the autism, they're all going to find that if they switch to organic, their kids get better. And they're going to stick with it after they find that out. They're going to tell their friends. So there's a revolution going on right now with people refusing to buy the toxic food. And you all, I hope, are already a part of that revolution. But if not, you should be, because in my family, we practice at home. We buy 100% organic. Much harder to pull that off when you're eating out, of course. So I think this is exciting that the organic is growing so much. And you can see that with Costco suddenly really stocking organic on their shelves. Whole Foods used to be the place of choice if you wanted to buy organic at a grocery store, But Costco has increased their organic sales by about $1 billion in just 6 months, and now they sell more organic than Whole Foods does. Really exciting. And it's great here in the Costco in Kauai. You can get a lot of organic choices. This is an activator, activator that I really like. His name is Tony Mitra. He's in Canada, and he's been doing a lot of canvassing with political process, trying to get the government in Canada to notice that glyphosate is toxic. And he's also been trying to find a way to allow people to test for glyphosate, because there was no place in Canada where you could test, and he was very frustrated about that. And he's finally set something up, and he's got a website where he can describe for the Canadians how they can get tested for glyphosate. And Zen Honeycutt has done the same thing for the U.S., so you can find out how to test for glyphosate here by going to the Moms Across America website. They have a pointer to a place where you can order a test kit and actually get your urine or to get your water tested for glyphosate. And, of course, the organic is booming. I mean, this is about in Canada, where even the government is willing to spend money, and I think that's really exciting. In the Prairie, Ottawa pledged $1.2 million. It's not a lot of money, but it's at least an attempt to actually acknowledge that organic needs to be nurtured, you know, and so the government is aimed at strengthening the organic sector by supplying some funds to help make that happen. And the Canadians, 58% of the customers, of the consumers, are buying organic on a weekly basis. Zen Honeycutt, I already mentioned, Moms Across America. She and I have given tag team talks together. She and I were in Beijing together. She's really great, tirelessly campaigning against glyphosate. And so she does all these activities to try to get moms on board and to get the moms to help to get the message out, 4th of July parades. And she interviews various scientists and puts them up on the website. Very, very fine woman. Neil Young has a new album called The Monsanto Years, and I haven't heard it yet. I've only heard one song, but I'm really pleased that this is in the music industry, because in my day, and he's, of course, my generation, but back in the Vietnam War, you know, there was a lot of protest music. And that really, to pull it into the music, gives you a chance to really get the message out to the general public in a way that's kind of fun and also emotional, you know. So I think that's really great. I hope some of the younger musicians, and I know Makana is really great, and I've heard him perform. And so we need more of the younger musicians to get involved. Richmond is a city which just took upon itself to ban glyphosate in public places. Based on the fact that glyphosate disrupts the gut microbes and is likely to cause harms to humans. I think it would be great if other cities would follow the example of Richmond, and I think it's something that they should all be looking into. And we could really get a wave of cities banning glyphosate as a starting point to moving up the chain towards the higher levels of the political system. Because it's not going to happen at the U.S. government level. Those guys are too strongly in bed with the industry to ever... I don't expect it to happen anytime soon that they're going to be banning glyphosate. We have to do it bottom up, and we have to do it by voting with our pocketbooks, by all of us individually buying organic food and refusing to buy the food that's contaminated with glyphosate. Monsanto Roundup class action suit. So this is kind of fun. This is a class action suit that says that they lied on their product label by saying that it's an enzyme not found in humans, whereas in fact it is found in humans because it's in our gut microbes. So we'll see where this goes. This is in the process right now. This is another one that I found on the web where they're saying, hey, if you've got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, give us a call. You might be able to get some money from Monsanto. Because the glyphosate, you might be able to show the glyphosate caused your problem. So I think that if we can get enough evidence of glyphosate's harm, we're going to have a huge number of lawsuits, just like the cigarette industry did. And I'm hoping that's what will happen, because that will really motivate them to start to think twice about having this product out there in the environment. Gary Hooser, I think he might be here tonight. And he's awesome, and I really admire him for the work on 2491. And, you know, of course, Hawaii has had three bills, you know, one in each of three different islands that have made it into law, which is really admirable. And I'm sure it's very frustrating for you. You get your law passed, and then it goes immediately into the lawsuits. It's just really frustrating how difficult it is. The political process should not be that difficult when it comes to poisoning your children. It's very frustrating. Outgrow Monsanto, that's the new movement in Maui, and I like that concept too. Just forget about the politics, just go ahead and do it yourself. You know, grow organic, learn how to get rid of the glyphosate in the soil, how to nurture the soil and bring it back to health, and then produce wholesome food like we had tonight in the dinner before this event. Wholesome organic food, just move on and get over, you know, just outgrow Monsanto. Bernie Sanders is, I'm excited. Really, I sort of think the only choice, because he's just the only one that I can see among the politicians who's actually recognizes the risks that we face with the path that we're going down, and I think he's we have hope that he can really turn it around. And in fact, he put together a bill in 2013 that would have made it impossible for the DARC Act to exist. The DARC Act is trying to remove the rights of the states to be able to individually label GMOs. And his law would have given the states permission to be able to label the GMOs and prevent the DARC Act from happening. But of course it didn't pass. Hillary Clinton hired former Monsanto lobbyist Jerry Crawford to run her campaign. So, go organic. This is my kitchen table in my home in Kauai. My husband and I hope to retire here someday. Right now we spend as much time as we can. Our other home is in Boston. And we love this island and we really want to see it healthy. And we really hope that the future will be moved towards this organic, sustainable agriculture and also local production of food so that we can be self-reliant. I think that will be really fantastic. And thank you all. So, in summary, glyphosate is toxic and it's going to bankrupt America due to the astronomical health care costs. We can expect half the kids born in 2032 to be diagnosed with autism, 80% of the boys. Obesity, kidney failure, breast cancer, gluten intolerance, anencephaly, those are some of the things, other consequences of glyphosate. Glyphosate disrupts biological processes through metal chelation, enzyme inhibition, disruption of gut microbes, many other effects. Many species are in distress due to glyphosate exposure, and people are waking up, and there are many ways to help to get the message out. We need to ban glyphosate from the market worldwide, and we need to return to sustainable organic agricultural practices. Thank you.
So we're just going to take a moment to set up a couple chairs and a mic, and we're going to take some questions if you want to stick around for that. We're going to have all three speakers up on the stage. We have two mics, one on either side of the audience, and so you're welcome to line up at either one. I will start with a question, I suppose, since no one's got up to ask one. Dr. Seneff, you've talked about the autism rates. One thing I wonder about is when I looked at Seralini's work and the amount of time it took before the cancer started taking off in the rats in that study, it seemed to be about, 30 or 40% of their lifespan. And what I wonder about is, are we going to see those same sort of cancer rates taking off in the human population once we have been eating GMO foods for, you know, another 30, 40% of our lifespan for 30 years or something like that, which it seems like we're coming up on in maybe 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say. We certainly are seeing increases, as you saw in my plots, in several different cancers. And I'm certainly very worried about all the toxic chemicals, not just the glyphosate. We live in a chemical age, and we're enchanted with chemicals. We think that they're solving all these problems for us, but they're not. I mean, they're causing a lot more problems than they're solving, in my opinion. I think we just need to be much more careful. We need to put the brakes on. Then there's also generational effects, transgenerational effects of these GMOs that have been seen in some of the studies in hamsters or gerbils or something. You know, you can see how the next generation has effects that were transplanted to the new generation from exposure in the previous generation. So we're getting a kind of a epigenetic effect that's carrying through in the children and the grandchildren of people that are exposed. So even if we stop cold turkey right now, we may still see effects in the grandchildren of people living today in terms of developmental problems and things like that.
Thank you. Question over here.
Hi. I just want to say mahalo for all the hard work you do. I have a kind of a multiple part question. I guess what I'm trying to get at is I study chemistry and biology, and it's been under my it's been shown to me my best understanding that basically all health of all organisms are based on periodic table, basically having the right minerals to do what the organism needs to do. So basically, I guess I'm proposing to you an idea that I also heard one more thing. I've also heard that when an organism has all of its minerals, it's capable of chelating all of the toxic chemicals that come into the organism because it is optimized and it's producing all of the enzymes required to do that. Mm. So that being said, there's an ancient method of precipitating minerals out of seawater. It was done in the Dead Sea area long, long time ago, Egypt, all that stuff. But basically, it's very simple. You add lye to seawater. You bring it to a certain pH, and it settles on the bottom. Basically, the hydroxide grabs all the minerals. So basically, all I'm proposing to you is that we have a solution, literally a solution, made from seawater, that has 100% of the periodic table. And I'm just, my question is, like, what do you think, this can be applied to soil. I'm a permaculturalist. This can be applied to soil, any organism. What are your thoughts on that?
I might comment because I mentioned Judy Hoy, who's a really fascinating woman studying the animals in western Montana. And she really swears by mineral salts. She uses mineral salts to nurture these animals back to health. She's even been able to correct an issue with a receded lower jaw by providing them with the minerals. She really believes in the minerals.
KKCR on AKAQA Kilauea.
Being bald, their feathers were not growing in. She could feed them minerals, the feathers would be repaired. So I think that you're right about the minerals, and I see that with glyphosate because it chelates these minerals and makes them unavailable. And they're going to be unavailable in the soil, in the plants that we eat, and then even as we're eating the minerals, they get hidden inside the glyphosate molecules. Even if we have them, we can't get at them. So you can see how we have a really major problem with mineral deficiency. So I agree with you on that. And it is a wonderful thought that there are all those minerals out there in all that seawater that we can harvest if we can just figure out how to turn it into something that we can take. So I think it's a great idea.
And just one follow-up question. Do you think it's possible that given the fact that we can have more minerals, can the glyphosate be used up in a sense? Like, can it chelate all the manganese or, for example, whatever it needs to do, and then it's used up, and then if we have more minerals, those minerals don't get chelated? Or is it like an enzymatic reaction where it just keeps doing it over and over again?
Yeah, I mean, the glyphosate would take away a certain percentage of them, but if you had enough, then there would still be some left because there's only so much glyphosate. You sort of outdo the glyphosate with the minerals. But I don't think it would actually get rid of the glyphosate. It would still be there. In fact, what I believe happens, and this is what the Sri Lankans talked about with the arsenic. They said that the glyphosate cages the arsenic and carries it to the kidney, and then in the acidic environment of the kidney, it drops it undoes the connection. So then both the arsenic and the glyphosate become toxic once they arrive at the kidney. And I think the same thing is going on with aluminum in the brain, that glyphosate's carrying the aluminum to the brainstem and then releasing it, and that's what's causing all the problems we're having, for example, with sleep disorder, which is connected to all kinds of neurological diseases like autism and Alzheimer's disease, where the pineal gland is being damaged by aluminum and glyphosate that are being, where the glyphosate's carrying the aluminum to the brain and then dropping it off. So it's really messy, and I think the glyphosate messes up manganese to make it toxic in certain parts of the body and deficient in other parts. I have other slides that talk about these things, but I didn't cover them today.
You know, I would really like to caution all of these things, because if you're telling me we're deficient in a chemical, you know, you're going to have to say, timing is everything. What tissue, when, what chemical? And you remember, my position is, just because it's natural, the natural chemical, sometimes too much is too much, and the wrong time is the wrong time. So on the one hand, you're binding out, chelating out these periodic table chemicals. But on the other hand, if you bind them, where did they go? It's the Sri Lankans who said you can create these complexes which precipitate in the kidney. There's a very complex thing here. And if you're going to shotgun the chemicals, I'm going to ask you which one, when, what tissue, how. That's why I think Judy and I represent the empiric group. Okay, it's a good idea. Let's try it. Show me the animal studies. Show me the human studies before we make recommendations for the market.